Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. The sounds that you are listening to are the Pacific Ocean not more than 3 hours ago, as I sat for over an hour, relaxing, enjoying myself, and just trying to lower my blood pressure. Because apparently I have high blood pressure now. Or at least it's high right now. And so I said, you know, I need to get away. I haven't been to the beach in a long time. I've got the beach chair in the car. It just so happens I had my digital recorder in there as well. And I thought, why not? You know, the ocean sounds a lot louder in a pair of headphones recording it than it does when you're standing right in front of it. It's funny. But it was quite enjoyable. It was time that I needed to spend just relaxing and enjoying nature, if you will. And those were actual seagulls. I did not insert those digitally. They actually came within about 6 feet of me as I sat there just watching the waves roll in and out, watching the tides, tide change. And it's quite extraordinary how we don't take the kind of time that we need for ourselves as individuals. We take care of our finances, we take care of our work, our families, our animals. Go ahead and put whatever you want on the list. When was the last time you took care of you? And so that's what I did today for at least an hour. And some people walked by, but I didn't talk with anybody for that entire hour. I just sat there and listened. Sad thing is that apparently somebody was trying to get a hold of me on my cell phone. And when I did get a hold of them, they were going, "Are you okay? Because I've been calling and calling." And I was sharing with my guest, who will be joining us in just a moment, that when I was growing up, and even into my teens and early 20s, you had one phone. It was a hard landline phone. It was a landline, as we call them now. And if I didn't pick it up and answer it and say hello, you didn't get a hold of me. It just rang. We didn't have answering machines in a voicemail. And it was okay. I mean, obviously, eventually you would get a hold of somebody. But it's time that we, as I heard just the other day, take a time out from technology. Step away if you can. If you need to, make phone calls to people and let them know, "I'm stepping away for an hour," because to be disconnected from technology for an hour these days, for some can be an eternity, but it is absolutely essential. We're going to connect with a higher power, if you will, yours. We're going to be talking with the author of Tell Me About Your God. Interviews with ordinary people revealing extraordinary personal thoughts on religion, spirituality, and the nature of existence. And my guest today is the author or the well, he is the author because he's the one that wrote the questions. He's the one that did the interviews. And his name is Robert McMillan. And Robert, I thank you so much. As I said in my promo, it's one of the most extraordinary books I have ever come across. What an incredible idea to go around asking people these quite profound questions when it comes to religion and spirituality. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now, you happen to live at least next door to my hometown. You live in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Right.
And this project, because it's really turned into more than just a book now. It sounds like it's starting to grow. I remember reading the word project when reading about additional interviews and more people want to participate in some fashion. How did this all begin? Because again, an incredible brainchild idea.
Yeah, it is. It's a great idea, and I'm really enjoying the whole process. It actually began, years ago in 1972, I happened to come upon this book called Working by Studs Terkel, who a lot of people have heard, and it's a wonderful book, and it talked about, it actually was composed of interviews of ordinary people, if you will, just people like elevator operators at the time there was such a thing, secretaries, waitresses, prostitutes, just every people from the everyday person, from all different walks of life. And I was fascinated what these people had to say about their jobs and, you know, describing their jobs and what they loved and what they hated about their jobs. And it just stayed with me for many years. And then about maybe 3 years ago, I just kind of recalled that and thought, you know, I was sitting around with a few people, as I explained in the book, and we were drinking some wine, and we were all talking about God. And, you know, we went around and said, like, what's God to you? And what's God to you? And we all came up with different answers to that question. So I just immediately thought, you know, wouldn't it be really cool to write a book where I interview different people about their thoughts about God and heaven and hell and so forth, and life and death and why we're here and the whole bit. And so that's how it got started. And I originated with, I wound up interviewing one or two of the, no, I think it was one person in that original group. And then I got connected to friends of them, friends of theirs, and then family members from out of town, and wound up interviewing people all over the country and, you know, from different religions. I could have gone on and probably wrote the book and included maybe 30 or 40 or 50 interviews, but I had to stop somewhere and just say, look, it's like when you do a painting, you can just keep going and redoing and redoing, but I felt like I needed to stop and be done with that and move forward with the project. So that's kind of it.
Well, I have to say that as I've had to flip through it because, you know, there's just so much there. A lot of this is just really, really neat, especially the diversity of faiths that are touched upon. But what I like are some of the quotes that you have in here. I love this one. I'm ready to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the ordeal of meeting me is another question or another matter. And that's from Winston Churchill. I find that rather very humorous, actually. But I went through and I took a look. You actually interviewed atheist.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I found my interview with was a guest. We were talking about another subject, but he happened to write a book about atheism. I had only heard about atheists and what they believe. Growing up in broadcasting in a Christian station, of course, I was educated about what atheists believe. And I thought, how am I going to know unless I really talk to an atheist? So I had the opportunity, and I found it incredible that here is an individual who has the same concerns about life and living, and actually shares the same beliefs in regards to, shall we call them, spiritual characteristics, but doesn't necessarily believe in an old man with a beard up in the sky who's running the show. It was extraordinary. And what a pleasant individual as well. Now, you have some great, obviously you start out with, do you believe in God? Do you believe in the devil or inherent evil spirits? What happens after we die? I mean, I'm just kind of running through some of those that I've highlighted. Under what circumstances could you be rejected by your church or spiritual group? Good question. Catholicism, as I grew up, excommunication is in order here. Do you meet regularly with like-minded people? And then here's a quote from you in regards to the subject matter, that it's apparent that there are people who already have answers to all of these questions. And, of course, these are just a minute number of questions by comparison to what you've asked. And yet it also presupposes some additional questions as to if they don't have the answer, where do I find them and how do I know that they are right ones for me? Now, the reason I bring these up is because I highlighted this. This was significant to me in your book. And it says here, religious communities seem to provide not only a certain camaraderie, but also support in the ever-evolving growth of the individual as well in God or spirit, the idea that we are of one mind as our very at our very core, we are also at one with each other. Does that seem to be the conclusion based upon the majority of the faith, the faith-believing people that you spoke with?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I even have an answer for that one.
Well, where would we go to find those answers? No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And let me just diverge a little bit, and because I think, you know, my feeling is, or my sense is, that when you write a book about anything, you all of a sudden become the expert. And I just want people to know, is like, I'm not an expert. I'm not an intellectual. If you were to ask me what is an atheist or a Muslim, I would give you just a brief answer based on my knowledge, and I have learned a lot by interviewing people for this book. But the real purpose right here is to bring different people's ideas to the table, and it's really sort of a, you know, for me it's a fun project, but the after effect has been, you know, we're seeing more of a diversity of opinions about God than we'd ever imagined, than I'd ever imagined. In other words, individual religions, if you talk to 50 different people, let's say, that are Catholic, you may get 50 different answers mm-hmm. to the question, you know, what is your, you know, how do you see God, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that's fascinating. But the real thing is not to give people facts about different religion. The real thing for me, the juice of this book is, you know, giving people not only an entertaining book to read, obviously, and I'd like to think so, but also letting them make up their own mind and seeing how other people, what other people believe, and then all of a sudden, there's really two outcomes about this book that I really like and that I've kind of feedback that I've got from people, is that all of a sudden people are discussing this book amongst each other and saying, you know, my comments have been from them, what a wonderful topic of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, any part of the book, you could just isolate and say, any statement, any question, any answer in this book, and you would say, you know, here's the beginnings of a wonderful discussion, you know? And the other part of it really is, as if, you know, that were enough, I thought, more than I had hoped. But the other part is it gives people the opportunity to reevaluate their own beliefs about, you know, heaven and hell and God and the devil and life and death and the whole bit there. So I'm really pleased with the comments and the feedback that I've gotten so far.
And, of course, the people that you interviewed are not experts either. They're ordinary people who have these faiths, these belief systems, and all they're doing is sharing them with you and with the reader. And what I find so extraordinary is that your purpose is similar to our purpose here, maybe on a broader scale, in that we are looking for those new paradigms, those new ways of living, those new ways of thinking, of believing, of moving forward, if you will, of evolving our species to the next level of, I want to say, greatness. I'm not sure that's the right word, but nonetheless, there, it just seems to me there's something more to life than what's going on right now. And I think that your book sort of addresses that. It pulls people back to their core. Do you get that sense at all that even as you ask these people, and I don't know how much time you gave them to evaluate these questions or whether they were on the spur of the moment per se, did you get the sense that these individuals were more thoughtful at that point than maybe they had been before? That, gee, you know, I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, I do believe in God, and then their explanation would continue. I do believe in an afterlife, and so it made them more thoughtful, maybe.
I would say so. That's true. For the most part, I would say people have got their beliefs down, but there's always that little hesitation that makes me think, you know, if they're in the middle of answering a question and they hesitate, there's always that sort of, well, you know, there's always that sort of little, lingering question about, do I really still believe this?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, does he really want the party line for my religion, or does he want what I really believe personally, what I truly believe? And I tried in the beginning to explain to people that what I really want, if there's a difference between what your church tells you or your religion tells you or your sacred text, you know, and what you feel personally and how you interpret that, please, I want your personal answers. That's what I want. That's what I'm really looking for. To answer your other question about the time involved, if I interviewed them personally, which may have been the case in about maybe 6 or 7 of the interviews,
mm-hmm.
We allowed about from an hour to an hour and a half. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting was how people wanted to just keep going after the interview was over, and they wanted to talk and talk and talk, and they had more questions and, you know, a wonderful book, it's a great idea, you know, are you going to do any more books? You should do this and you should do that and get this, you know, it's like I got to be on overload almost after a while. I had to sort of just limit it to like an hour and a half and say, I'd love to talk to you more, but I've got more interviews to do. But it was fun. I mean, it was really a fascinating process, which is, I do talk about that a little bit in the book. So,
well, I want to talk to you in the second half of our program more about you, and I might even turn the tables on you here, so just be advised. I'm asking you.
Can I quickly just ask you, answer one question real quick?
Sure.
About your question about where do we go to find the answers? And I, after thinking about that and trying to avoid that question, I've come up with an answer that fits for me. And I think we have to go inside.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the things I've learned, is that all of these different versions of God that we have for each person, I think you have to decide, do I want to believe what my religion says or what the party line says or what my sacred text says, or do I go inside and can I connect to God in that way? So a lot of people would say, you know, that's where you find the answers that you can't find elsewhere. That's just another way.
Well, and that's probably the best advice that most of my guests would give as well, which brings me to the interesting observation by one of my listeners, and it was actually, I suppose, fairly early on in this program. They would listen to the programs, and they would say, gee, you know, your guests, they're always talking about the same things. You know, we're all one, and we're God is us, and we are God, and universal love, and all these different things. You know, you're always saying the same things. You don't talk about anything differently. And my observation was, well, if that's what you're hearing from each of my guests, then don't you think that there's a point there? So I ask you about the people that you interviewed, both who are in the book and who didn't make it into this particular edition. What did you see was or were the common threads that were woven in through these people and their belief systems?
Well, you know, that's really a kind of a tough question that I hadn't really considered before. And I guess the one thing is their commitment to their particular faith. Now, the hard part for me was listening to a lot of things that I didn't particularly agree with, but I had to remain very, very subjective and just be a good listener. But I would say the commitment to their faith may be a common thread. And also, as I explained before, there's just this sort of little idea that there's some questions there that they're not willing to quite answer or ask yet. And that's one of the things that I go into in the introduction of my book, is I start asking questions. In other words, I'll go deeper than, you know, what is God? Who is God? What does he look like? Where does he live? Is he in my image? If I'm Chinese, is he Chinese? If I'm black, is he black? Kind of things like that, you know. How do I fit in to this whole thing? Why am I really here? And how does that relate to God? What is the connection between God and, say, psychology? Is there a connection? How can I use certain techniques? Are there techniques I can use to improve my understanding of my spiritual nature? So I'm all for asking the questions, because unless you know what the questions are or are willing to ask the questions, then the answers don't come. But once you ask the questions, the answers are kind of right there.
Again, the book itself, which is entitled "Tell Me About Your God," is, I think it's a great story. A great read. I would venture that you're going to be coming out with maybe a second edition with additional interviews, or what is the next step for this?
Well, let me just say this. As you probably know, I'm also involved in, I'm a speaker as well, and I also am a law of attraction consultant, which is really sort of, you know, kind of where my beliefs lie. And I got into the whole God thing sort of as an afterthought, and I just never know what's going to happen yet, next. I never know what I'm going to be doing. I do believe I will do a sequel to this book, one possibly with all children.
Now that
only
would,
interviewing children.
That would be interesting, yeah.
I mean, I had spoken to a few children. There is one young person in the book who, at the time of the interview, was 13, and very, very insightful. But I thought, wouldn't it be cool to interview, say, a child of 7 or 8 who has maybe not quite formulated their opinions, and just kind of get an idea? They can still express themselves quite well, but maybe their ideas and beliefs haven't hardened so much to where they still can, you know, have that sort of childlike curiosity and childlike wisdom that they would, you know, put into those answers, you know.
Interesting.
So
I'm
thinking about doing that as well. So.
And one last question before we take our first break here. Why did you choose to use pictures of your guests or your interviewees as children?
Well, I kind of like the idea of the anonymity. And one of the things that I told a few of my interviewees, there's 20 total in the book, and I believe 2 of them chose to be anonymous for whatever reason. In other words, I know one person was involved with an organization or a religious organization that didn't coincide with what his belief was.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Can I do this anonymously?" I said, "Sure." You know, and I kind of had been thinking about the whole black and white photo, childhood photos, because I think it'd be cool to see. That's when usually when our beliefs start and we form. Most of us form our religious beliefs, whether by choice or by community or family or whatever, when we're very, very young. And I just thought it would be really cool because, I mean, you know, you got a guy there, you know, person Joe Smith. Well, who cares what he looks like today, really? I mean, they're all wonderful people. But I thought, you know, you look at a child's photo and it's like, here's a child, and you're picturing this child's photo, and you're hearing all of this, these things coming out of them about their spirituality, and I just thought it was fascinating. So that's the intellectual answer. The real answer probably is I thought it'd be fun and cool.
Well, I do think it's neat, and of course, even your picture, you as a child, is that is you on the back cover, right?
That is me. Uh-huh. Excuse me. That is me making my first Holy Communion. Out of St. Mary's Catholic School, parochial school in Long Island City, New York.
Wow. Well, we're going to continue talking further with my guest, Robert McMillan. He's the author of Tell Me About Your God, Interviews with Ordinary People Revealing Extraordinary Personal Thoughts on Religion, Spirituality, and the Nature of Existence. I'm Richard Dugan. We'll be right back.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Ropa Chari bring you this January health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health powerful quick tip for natural weight loss. Water lowers the amount of fat stored in your body. Drink water to lose weight. Try to drink a minimum of 8 8-ounce glasses of water a day. Water is the safest and most effective weight loss supplement on the market today. Being even 1% dehydrated can cause a significant drop in metabolism, which can also interfere with weight loss. Here's how. If you drink enough water, your kidneys will do their job of excreting toxic waste products from your body, and your liver can focus 100% on burning stored fat for energy. So the more water you drink, the less fat you'll store in your body, and the less water you drink, the more fat you'll store in your body. So drink at least 8 8-ounce glasses of water a day. Other benefits in addition to a better metabolism include great complexion and better muscle tone. Here's another secret. Water prevents you from overeating. Water creates that feeling of fullness and helps to suppress your appetite. Just drinking one glass of water 30 minutes before a meal is a good way to keep you from overeating at a particular meal and enhances your digestion. Preventing overeating, which is one of the main causes of weight gain, will not only help you maintain your current body weight, but will also help you to lose weight.
And water has zero calories. If you substitute all your sodas, coffee, teas, and beer for a glass of water, you could lose a good amount of weight. If you were to replace 2 bottles of soda with 2 bottles of water every day, you would be cutting 500 calories from your daily diet and potentially lose a pound a week. So be sure to drink at least 64 ounces of water throughout the day for the benefits of weight loss, to prevent overeating, and to increase your metabolism.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan with Tell Me Your Story, and now we're going to take a pause to talk with our astronomical, astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald, as we find out what in the world is going on out there that's affecting us down here. Beth, Happy New Year to you. It's the first time we've had a chance to talk since the first of the year.
Happy New Year.
And we've got some interesting things going on as far as, the sun, the moon, and the stars, as it were.
Yes.
And so we seemed to have done fairly well getting through the latter part of 2010 and Mercury in retrograde. But why do I have this feeling that and again, I'm trying to put the positive spin on it. This is an opportunity for us to observe and grow. But there's another thing happening? Or am I wrong and we're looking at some sort of nice movement through the month of January into February?
Well, you know, I'm always happy when Mercury is direct. It just makes things so much easier, you know, and that's always good. You know, there's a lot of energy right now in Capricorn, which, it's very organized. It's an earth sign, and I kind of love this time of year with all this Capricorn. You know, the sun goes in, and usually the smaller planets, Mars, Mercury, Venus, and they're all either, have either passed or about to go in or are in. And it's such a good time for all that Capricorn, because this is a time when we start a new chapter. We identify our personal values and beliefs and use that to set our intentions and goals and New Year's resolutions and that sort of thing for the new year. And so the good news is, you know, I think there's always an ease when we're mucking around that way because it makes things clearer. The difficulty is it's also, when you're, it's a taking stock, and so you become aware of, you know, what didn't happen last year that you really want to make happen this year. Or I've talked to a lot of people this week who are already organizing for their taxes and stuff, and there's, you know, that's painful. But, it's really hard to make that fun. But,
yeah.
But, you know, I like this time of year because it is a time of starting over, you know, and it's a particularly powerful one. There was an eclipse this week, which always brings greater clarity.
Ah, well, I've always taken the perspective when it comes to my own medical condition that I don't want to know. I just don't want to know. You know, I'm feeling great. I'm doing fine. I don't want to know. And so now I know, and it's like, now my mind is on it. And it's like, oh, but, and then now everybody's telling me, well, don't think about it. what? Don't think about the big pink elephant in the middle of the room.
How you think about it.
Yeah, that's it.
These are well-meaning people who use the wrong words or who don't use them the most appropriately. Mm. For me, it's never about don't think about it. It's about think about it in the most powerful, the most positive, the most empowering way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to do that and also think about getting in touch with you. You are you have a website called BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Yes.
People can get in touch with you through there. They can touch base with you about what you've shared here, as well as any other concerns that they might have. As a matter of fact, this is rather interesting. The reading that Amrita and I had with you, what, about a year ago?
Yep.
For some reason, I'm carrying it around in my briefcase. I pull it out every once in a while, flip through it, and, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. But I do. I have that in my briefcase, and I peruse it from time to time. So, you know, it's not a bad reference piece of material, and it's always good to go back and take a look at those kinds of things.
Yeah, it can be a real anchor or a navigational tool.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, well, Beth, I thank you so much, and we will talk to you again next week and get more information as to what's going on. Again, it's BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Richard.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. We will be right back.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married 1913 when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. They want to get you a man's load right now until they go, and they'll go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
You know me, Elizabeth Stewart, and let me tell you a personal secret. I am so grateful to the Santa Barbara Newcomers Club because through this 50-year-old, distinctly Santa Barbara institution, I made friends, drank wine, heard lectures, danced, discovered great art, and experienced Santa Barbara history. If you're a newcomer to Santa Barbara, be part of the best-kept secret in town. Make friends that I personally guarantee you will have for life.
But those dreams have remained and they've turned around.
You moved here because life is beautiful in Santa Barbara. Let newcomers show you just how deep and rich our community is. I understand value and culture, and this is an amazing club. For more information on the Santa Barbara Newcomers Club, call 805-564-2555.
Welcome back. Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Or tell me about your God. Interviews with ordinary people revealing extraordinary personal thoughts on religion, spirituality, and the nature of existence. R.J. McMillan is my guest, and we're joining him, or he's joining us from Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's, again, as I said before, a very extraordinary book because it's an idea whose time is long since come, and we've needed something like this. I think what you're doing, R.J., is you're, as we want to do, we want to take a look at all those different points on the circle. I mean, let's just say God's in the center of the circle, or existence, or life, whatever you want to put in there. But each one of us has a different take on it. And through these interviews that you've put together, you give us a glimpse into individuals. And you made the comment that the individuals that you talked with didn't necessarily express the party line, if you will, that they had their own take on the religion, the belief. And I found that fascinating as I was growing up in Christian broadcasting. I came across a few of those folks, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're stepping outside the nine dots. You found that more often than not, I take it?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the case more often than not.
And let me ask you, were there religions? That's the only term we'll use to do a cover all of the beliefs. Were there religions that you were not even aware existed, and all of a sudden, really, I didn't know there was such a faith as whatever it was?
Well, there probably that is true, but of the ones I have interviewed, probably I selected them because I did know that they existed but had no idea. To give you an example, the Baha'i faith, I had always heard it was a very, very open and understanding and very tolerant sort of a religion, and but really didn't really know anything about it, and still am very, very limited on that. But I thought it was fascinating enough to where I included two interviews on the one religion, just so people can kind of get a little bit of a glimpse of how two different people might answer the same questions on the same faith. And I did that as well as far as the Quaker religion also. And I just think, again, it's fascinating to kind of compare the answers. What so many people have told me as well that I think is extraordinarily interesting is that a lot of these interviews were done about a year and a half to two years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And being in touch with a lot of these people today, they say, gee, you know, after reading my comments, my opinions and so forth, my beliefs have changed significantly.
Wow.
Over the last 2 years. Not all of them, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool to take somebody and, interview them, say, at X point in time, and then maybe 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the line and see what kind of changes, in their religious beliefs.
What an exercise for each of us to take. That would be extraordinary.
Many of us do that, I believe. And there are a lot of people, there's room for a lot of different beliefs, a lot of different ways to do it. And I found a lot of people are just very, very happy, going to church, not saying there's anything wrong with that at all. But other people maybe question a little more and aren't satisfied with the pat answers that they receive. And want more answers, and that's what I love. I love saying, okay, well, what's your question? Well, there's your answer. And every time you ask a question, it's like peeling an onion. Like there's another layer and another layer and another layer. And that, to me, is the fascination with this whole thing around God.
Well, let me ask you, it's going to start to feel a little warmer where you are because we're turning the spotlight on you.
Oh, no, I see it. Yeah.
Just don't go into the light right now, okay?
Okay.
Tell me about your belief as far as where it started as to where it is today. Do you believe in God and the devil and an afterlife and so forth?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I always tell people when they ask me that, I said, especially in reference to the book, when we're talking about the book,
mm-hmm.
I always say to them, this book is not about me at all. Although some of my beliefs, if you look carefully, maybe not too carefully, but you'll see they'll sneak in there a little bit, like in the introduction. Or
mm-hmm.
There's a section in the beginning after the introduction called Thoughts on Religion and Spirituality, where I just kind of go off and I talk about different things and possibilities and the way I see it, but not too much about my beliefs. So, but aside from that, as you probably know, and I may have mentioned before that I am also a speaker and a law of attraction consultant. So my beliefs really go more toward universal law or law of attraction or cosmic law or ancient wisdom, if you will, whatever you want to say. And the big difference, I think, between my beliefs and what I see out there for maybe 90% of the people, and that's just a rough estimate, is that I believe that most people, let's say, would believe that God is external to them, somebody out there up in the heavens or somewhere outside of them, and I see God as part of who we are. In other words, I see God as not separate from me, but a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
And of course, you also stated too, and your picture on the back cover shows this, that you obviously were born and raised Catholic.
Roman Catholic, correct. Mm-hmm.
Where was it in your growing spiritually that you began to make that transition?
Well, I think one of the things I wrote about, partly in the book, I believe, is that I had talked a little bit about having a childhood where I couldn't verbalize anything, but I always had the feeling that the religion was not right for me. It just didn't seem to make sense, but I could not verbalize that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 17, I just walked away from the church totally.
Wow.
And basically did nothing, walked away from God, and never gave it a thought for, maybe another 15 years.
Now, was this a passive or an active walking away? In other words, you just stopped going to Mass and stopped participating?
I stopped going to church. In fact, a funny little story is my brother, he was like 18 and I was 17. He was 18 and a half, I was 17. And one day he said, come on, me and my friends, we're going to church. Come with us. Because I always used to go with my mom and dad. You know, we'd go to church. And for some reason, he decided to include me. So we wound up sitting at a soda fountain. He said, this is our church. And I started asking him, and he told me in no uncertain terms, that's baloney. You know, you don't want to do that. You know? And he was my big brother, which was kind of, one down from God for me. He was like,
yeah.
I idolized him.
Yeah.
And I just thought, if he's not going to church, I don't like it, I'm not going either. So that was the start of it.
Wow. I have to I would share the same general experience at 16, and I was in high school and, of course, delivering newspapers. And every Sunday morning, I'd have to get up very early to do so, and I'd get home around 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I'd go back to bed. I was exhausted. And, of course, then I've got to get up at 9 to go to Mass at 10 or what have you. And finally, I didn't want to go, and my folks didn't make me, and they told me years later why. Because they said, we didn't want you to push away from the church. I never did. It was so funny when I would meet people who were quote-unquote ex-Catholics. I thought, that's sad. I just found that the church didn't serve me anymore, and I just kind of grew in different directions. I still have a love for it and the ritual and the ceremony. And, it's still a wonderful olfactory experience to go into a Catholic church and smell the incense burning. That is just a wonderful feeling for me. Coming home, in a manner of speaking.
It is, and it's a lot of good memories of that from your childhood. And I think what I find right now, to get a little more into what I believe, is that the church hierarchy, say, or parents are very, very well-meaning. The difference between my beliefs and what they believe in is that they see children coming into this life as just sort of this lump of clay that needs to be molded and educated on the ways of the world. And I see children coming into this experience as already intelligent. In other words, it's God's spirit coming into this physical lifetime already with a plan, already intelligent, already knowing what they want. Basically to achieve.
Yeah.
And I know there's free will involved, but I think as a society, we do not honor our children in the sense that we don't trust that they know what's best for them. And in most cases, if we just left them alone, I know a lot of people disagree with this,
mm-hmm.
but if we just left them alone, they'd be so much better off.
Well, I'm often reminded when people talk about children of that song of the 60s that children must be carefully taught. And unfortunately, that's what happens, is that they are. They are indoctrinated with, or taught, whatever word you want to use, with the beliefs, the ideas, the mindset of the parents, the relatives, those in school. And then you wonder why we have some of the adults we have. But by the same token, there are probably just as many children who grow up and grow away from those things because, as you just stated, they're smart enough already to know that's not for me. That doesn't serve me. I don't want to go there. I want to go over here. And I just think it's an extraordinary insight that, we need to take a better look at, I think.
Absolutely. And I always thought it odd that you know, why is all, what about all this teenage rebellion? What's going on there? What are they rebelling against? You know, and I think that's what they're rebelling against. Their own individuality has been squelched, and they're saying, you know, I've had it. I've had enough. You know, you need to listen to me. I am a person. I have a consciousness, a mind of my own.
Yeah.
And I know what's best for me in many cases.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say is there are schools in the country. In fact, I think there's one in Massachusetts, I believe it is, somewhere in New England, called the Sudbury School, where the children actually...
Go ahead.
They compose their own curriculum, totally. In other words, the people who run the school sit them down. What do you guys want to do today? What do you guys want to study? What do you want to do? Well, I'd like to learn how to play the guitar. Great. Another guy might say, well, I'd like to learn oceanography. Has always fascinated me.
Hmm.
You know, so nobody's sitting there telling them what they need to study. And my understanding is that they're getting some really good results, and I believe them. I'm not an expert at any of the schools at all, certainly, but I do believe the Montessori model, it was also based on that philosophy.
Well, and it's interesting, and it's not a situation where they're just bringing the kids in, and if they don't want to do anything that day, I don't know, maybe they don't, but it's not like setting a kid out in an intersection and saying, you're on your own. That's
right.
Not what this is about. At least that's right. Not what it sounds like. Tell me about your God. R.J. McMillan is my guest, and we're talking about related subjects as well here on Tell Me Your Story. And if folks want to get in touch with you, and I thought this was interesting. I was looking, and I had to chuckle because of what came across my mind. I was looking in the back of the book, and if you feel that you have a unique religious or spiritual path, contact me for possible inclusion in a similar project in the future. And you give both your email and your phone number. And people can contact you at rjmcmillan@cox.net. And do you want to go ahead and give out the phone number?
Yeah, and I'll just spell out McMillan. It's R.J. McMillan, and McMillan is spelled M-C-M-I-L-L-A-N at cox.net. And absolutely, anybody can call me at any time, preferably not after midnight. But... it's area code 480-212-2042, and I'd love to hear from anybody who has a comment or who would just love to chat about all this.
And there's also a website that we've linked to, so people can find out more about you and the book and the testimonials and the and other items, as well as the link, I'm sure, there to your email account, and they can contact you as well. So we encourage people to do that.
Now, can I mention the email, the website? Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
I'd like to, yeah, because it's tellmeaboutyourgod.com. Very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can connect to me if they want to buy books, the book. They can purchase it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble as well. But my purse, this tellmeaboutyourgod.com, is hooked up with Ex Libris, who is the publisher of this book. And can I just say one more thing?
We're not finished yet, so go ahead.
Okay, I want to say one more thing before I forget it. I totally have enjoyed doing this whole hour with you, and I would love to come back and talk to you more about my beliefs. And as I told you before, I'm a law of attraction consultant, and that's probably half of what I do as far as that and being an author as well. But love to do another show with you sometime on that.
Absolutely. Would love to have you come back and talk further about this as well as the law of attraction. That is a subject in and of itself that fascinates me. It's interesting how when that first came out in particular in modern times in The Secret, I began to hear about it. I hadn't seen the video or read the book yet, but I began to realize this isn't anything new. I've been studying this since I was 17 years old. Somebody said to me, well, yeah, but this is just about marketing. But then I began talking with people about it and interviewing people about it. And some would say, oh, it's a great thing, but they forgot one thing. And they would elucidate on that. And, oh, and they even forgot this thing over here. And I'm just sitting here going, you know, what is the deal here? You know, because everybody thinks that, well, yeah, that was great, but, and it's like,
but
calm down, just hold on a second here.
Well, it's not for everybody.
No.
I mean, it's not. It's something that you have to be drawn to.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Or attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not, you know, going to be for everybody, and that's okay. There's
yeah.
room for so many, many different beliefs.
And it's something that has been around, obviously, for centuries. There is no question about that. It's just that every new presentation is going to attract, no pun intended, different people at different times. It will resonate today with those that it won't resonate with tomorrow, and vice versa.
Yeah. In fact, I wanted to mention to you that what's interesting, I started really investigating alternative religions, spiritual beliefs, whatever, and I got kind of hooked into guys like, this back in the early 70s, I got hooked into guys like Krishnamurti and Ram Dass and guys who were, involved in the Eastern philosophy, and I thought that was fascinating. But all the people that I've ever studied under, including, I don't know if you probably won't know this till you read the back of my book, but I spent a year and a half in a spiritual community called Cornucopia in Kentucky, and run by a fellow by the name of Ken Kies Jr.
Hmm.
And that was just a fascinating experience. But I've been studying all of this stuff pretty actively since the early 70s, and with Law of Attraction, I have finally found a philosophy that answers all my questions without exception.
Interesting. Well, you may want to tune in. You may want to tune in next week, because we go back to sort of my spiritual roots, not Catholicism, but as I mm-hmm. began going down a different road in searching, because I'm going to have on a gentleman who has written a book about the author of a book that was the first one that I read that sent me on my journey, my search, as I called it. The book that I read was Autobiography of a Yogi. The gentleman I'm going to interview is the last living teaching disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. Kriyananda is his name, Swami mm-hmm. Kriyananda, and he'll be joining us next week. So you may want to tune in for that. Before we let you go, and we're fast running out of time, so I only have about 30, 45 seconds for an answer from you. Done a lot of stuff, written this book and all this wonderful thing. Why this? Why now?
I can't answer that. It just seemed like a good idea. The time is good and is now. What's fascinating is I am just meeting so many people who are hooked into this, and it's just almost like a cosmic thing. It's like Law of Attraction at work. In other words, I put myself out there and said, "Look, this is me. This is who I am. This is what I want to do."
Extraordinary.
And I've gotten so much positive feedback. I'm just blown away by it.
Tell Me About Your God by R.J. McMillan. Tell Me About Your God.com. That's the website. R.J. McMillan at Cox.net is the email. That's R.J.M.C.M.I.L.L.A.N at Cox.net. And R.J., thank you so much for joining us. We will have you back. Matter of fact, stay on the line and we'll talk about scheduling you for sometime in May or June to talk about Law of Attraction.
Fascinating. I enjoyed it, Richard. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and I hope that you will join us again next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Until then, love to love.